Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
EA is cancelling a Star Wars shooter, we got a new Pokemon game on the way, and layoffs continue to rock the industry, what's left of it anyway. This is VGC, the Video Game Podcast, with Mr. Andy Robertson.
Hello.
And me. Hello, Andy Robertson, how are you doing?
I'm good, mate, how are you? Right.
I'm good. I'm always honoured when we've got the head honcho of VGC on the show. Jordan, unfortunately, isn't here because he was involved. Some might say he masterminded the whole Glaswegian Willy Wonka immersive theatre experience, and he's currently on the run. He's got a big bag full of £20 notes, and he's not coming back
hair.
For a little while. He's keeping his nose clean, keeping his head down. To be quite frank, big news on the show this week. More layoffs, obviously, as we said. But EA has cancelled Respawn's Star Wars first person shooter, an FPS game that was involved with Peter Hirschman, who obviously worked at LucasArts for a long time, and he was the Medal of Honor co-creator. He also worked on the Battlefront games, The Force Unleashed, and more. And on Wednesday, more company-wide layoffs in EA, 700 company-wide, and they've decided to can it. I mean, it's a real cabal of incredible licenses and titles. I imagine that the marketing spend on this game would have been the best part of £250,000 anyway.
Well, yeah, it's just depressing talking about this constant kind of cavalcade of layoffs, right? But I mean, beyond the you know, kind of the personal aspects of that, the personal cost, this is kind of a rare glimpse into some of the actual games that, you know, we're going to miss out on. I mean, anyone of our age, Pete, you know, when you hear Star Wars and first person shooter, it kind of raises stomachs. Exactly. Which came out yesterday. The remaster came out yesterday.
Yes, the remaster. I think I was expecting, because they've used that company that's done
Night Dive. They're
yes.
really, really, really good.
And I saw it and I was like, I was expecting, I know they've sort of remastered the cutscenes and stuff, but I was expecting, would it be okay to say that I was expecting a little more in the
Well, they're more like on the authentic side, right? They're not going to slap some, you know, crazy new art
style. Unreal Engine.
They've made more changes than you think. If you look at side by side, like the cutscenes have actually like the, you know, the art, the hand
almost
drawn
redrawn. Cut scenes.
Yeah, they are quite different. But so it's I guess ironic on the day that classic Star Wars first person shooter was remastered. That we've had the news that this one's cancelled. Which, you know, I think I can tell you from the reaction on our social media channels, a lot of people were looking forward to this. A lot of people were really disappointed by this news. As you said, kind of the talent behind it, Peter Hirschman, it is a very, very experienced game designer, on, you know, co-created Medal of Honor, works on the Battlefront game, so he knows what he's doing. It's difficult not to be depressing on these podcasts every week talking about these stories, right, of just the ridiculous amount of cutting that's happening in the games industry at the moment. I mean, the eye-opening thing in EA's statement was they basically said, we're going to refocus on like IP and franchises that we own. As soon as you saw that, you're like, whoa, shit, what does that mean for your... I think they've announced 3 Star Wars games they're working on.
And so they've definitely cancelled one of them.
Yes, I think they've said that the third Jedi game is still coming. Right. They also have a strategy game that they announced a couple of years ago, a Star Wars strategy game, which I imagine Respawn wasn't working on anyway because it doesn't fit their expertise, right? So there's no mention of that. But they basically say, like, look, we're going to refocus on Jedi and, you know, Apex Legends, basically. But I mean, it raises eyebrows, right? For a company that's working on, are they working on an Iron Man game And right. They're working on another Marvel game. It's Black Panther, right? I think I'm going to get shot in the comments for that. But they're working on two Marvel games. And look, from my perspective, and from a lot of players' perspectives, it's just really getting really annoying now, isn't it? That this short termism. They started working on all of these licensed games, and the whole idea of that was that it kind of was less risky. Because obviously games now cost so much money to make. It's more of a sure bet if you can go in with Iron Man than it is if you're working on a new IP or your own franchise that's, frankly, far less popular than obviously Marvel. And now they're like, 5 years later, we changed our minds. You're all
sucking
fired.
It off, yeah. With if EA can't get it right, who the hell can? That's the thing for me, the scale of EA. If they can't get games out the door, the industry has to sort of look inward.
There's a lot of problems, right? Without going, too into the nitty gritty, it's like there's a lot of reasons why this is happening everywhere. Everything costs more. You have the obvious repercussions of like during the pandemic when gaming was booming, everyone invested. Like you couldn't turn around without someone offering you some VC money to launch a game studio. And that not only has that come down, and they were expecting that to come down, but you've also had stuff like, there would have been effects on the, Russia invading Ukraine, on just the cost of everything. The cost of an employee is now higher. A lot of the sure bets that companies took to put their profits up haven't really taken off as fast as they hoped, like, cloud streaming and subscription. So it's not happy times at the moment. It's not happy times, but hopefully, we get through this year, which I'm officially calling 2023 part two, and next year with a new Nintendo console, and GTA 6 is a bit rosier for everyone.
Might be a bit of a shot in the
arm. That's what the games industry needs. It needs a shot in the arm right now for people to become confident again, start spending money again, stop laying off bloody employees of companies who work on 10 million selling games.
I mean, obviously the real crime here is an industry beset with just widespread piracy. I mean, I don't know about you, Andy. I don't play a first-party purchase game anymore. I'm just constantly pirating and emulating. Nintendo says that Zelda was pirated 1 million times pre-release as it sues Yuzu emulator creator. Nintendo of America has filed a lawsuit against Tropicase, the creator of Switch emulator Yuzu. Yuzu's like a sort of lemon, a sort of Japanese lemon flavor, isn't it?
I suppose
you use for cooking. It's very delicious. This is less delicious if you're Nintendo. In a complaint spotted by GameFile reporter Stephen Totilo. The platform holder argues that the defendant and its agents were fully aware of the use of Yuzu by others in performing circumvention and in facilitating piracy at a colossal scale. Now, I am on nodding terms with Yuzu. Wasn't there a recent situation where Yuzu had to be pulled from Steam because it actually contained some keys, some decrypting keys from Nintendo of America, on Nintendo rather, and that's why that got pulled. So it's not quite as, I think with nostalgia and emulators, people do sort of go, well, it was all reverse engineered. As long as you provide your own keys, everything's fine, everything's kosher. But in this particular situation, it wasn't quite the case, which seems like a glaring sort of open goal.
I'm surprised this hasn't happened sooner. I mean, Nintendo are kind of famously heavy-handed when it comes to, this sort of thing, modding, fan project, simulation. Excuse me, I'm going to cough. I mean, to give you a little peek behind the curtain, from a reviewer's perspective who, often reviews in Nintendo games, it's the last, I would say, maybe 2 years. It's just become absolutely... you're surprised if the game isn't being emulated by players before your review goes up than if it is.
Right,
now.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. Like, first
is it
person,
just because of the power? Is it just because of the power of the Switch is so minimal compared to the other ones? We've not even got PlayStation 4, up and running properly yet. So it's you can understand why the Switch is a little easier to get up and running.
That's often the case, is that we can't talk about a game that we're reviewing. We've had time to spend with and review properly. And then it's always, by the time we get to it, everyone's already finished it,
Yeah.
I mean, like in this lawsuit notes, always that they say that an estimated 1 million people downloaded Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, which is their biggest game for years, before it even came out, which is true. I don't know if the number's true, but everyone was, on the internet seemingly was emulating that game.
Indeed, but was that because it was a Wii U? They were emulating the Wii U version of the game, weren't they? Wasn't?
Oh no, no, you're thinking of the previous game.
Oh, I'm thinking of the first one, right? Sorry, yeah, okay.
No, it's super common now, super common. Mm. It's the case where if I'm reviewing a Nintendo game and it comes out and everyone's not playing it, you know, on the Discord channels and social media and stuff before I've published my review, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
It's like, for example, Nintendo didn't announce who the new voice of Mario was.
Mm.
And we found that out via some kids on a Discord who had, you know, got the game early and dug through the files. And
are Nintendo just a bit of a... You know, Japanese developers and program teams are criticized for being, you know, Japanese boardrooms in their entirety are criticized for being a bit 1970s, a bit 1980s. They're very stuck in their ways. They're still, you know, everything's based on the fax machine, et cetera, all the usual tropes. But is it just Nintendo are a bit of a throwback in every sense from the top to the bottom, and they're just not as lithe and they're just not as understanding of how the whole world works when it comes to people emulating and people.
Well, I'd say their business is very different, right? They rely on back catalog. They rely on selling their own games. They're not like the other consoles where they're relying on third parties and big new releases and discounts.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you want to buy Mario Kart 8 Deluxe now, which is pushing 10, well, it's got to be 10 years old if you include the Wii U version, you're still paying 50 quid. You know, that game continues to sell, and Nintendo games continue to sell. They really don't cut the prices much. So they need to protect that, right? There's two sides to this, I guess. I mean, the difficulty these days is that preservation's just become far, far more of an important issue now that we've moved into the digital age in games. I mean, just in the last, you know, kind of 18 months, you've seen Nintendo close entire storefronts on Wii U, on 3DS. There are thousands of games you cannot get now because they've done that, you know, unless you already own them. Which is super disappointing for the medium, for the art form. So I can see people why the emulation is very important from that perspective. I would imagine from this point of view, Nintendo just feel like they need to be seen to be doing something about this because piracy it does really affect platforms. When it becomes this as rampant as it looks like it is now on Switch.
Well, look at how they've gone all out after the is it the MIG Switch, that thing that's
kind of, that cart
just come out. Yeah, I mean, you cannot find a single YouTube. I think you can find one YouTube video where a man is reviewing it, but I mean, in they just seem very, very aggressive.
And you remember the R4 card,
that
right?
Down. Yeah, massively. And so that was everywhere.
It all comes from that.
Mm.
From that experience where companies abandoned the DS
because of that car.
Like third-party companies abandoned the DS. Rockstar released Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars on DS. Great game.
Mm.
And it didn't sell that much, and they estimated that it was down to piracy, that so many millions of people just pirated it. Mm. And that kind of like killed off the confidence. Once the confidence has gone, companies stop making games to the platform and then consumers lose out, right? So I do think there's an element of that where Nintendo feel like they need to be doing something, you know,
to make it look like they're on the side of the
especially with their next system, you know, now kind of year out. I mean, I imagine this has been in the works for more than, you know, a couple of months, but it does feel like that to me.
That's why you worry about kind of backwards compatibility with the second Switch, because obviously, like, a lot of the inroads for hacking and kind of patching techniques usually come through the previous kind of because people understand the architecture of the previous system. A lot of these kind of like memory infecting and injecting kind of come through these little open doors to a certain extent.
It is a bit of a risk, isn't it? What I would say to that is, the 3DS, the original 3DS, had backwards compatibility with DS. You could put the carts in. So that kind of tells you all you need to know, that clearly they feel like they can counteract these kind of tools with some new kind of hardware measures.
Mm. Well, I mean, Nintendo are on the bones of their bums, obviously, because Zelda Tears of the Kingdom was last year's second best-selling game. It sold over 20 million copies, a total only beaten by Hogwarts Legacy. So, I mean, they're going to be going cup in hand, aren't they, really? Cap in hand, cup in hand, whichever way. Pokemon Legends ZA is officially coming to Nintendo Switch in 2025. Is that Zar? Is that ZA? Is that, I don't Zaza. Really know.
Who brings back awful memories for any West Ham fans. Pokemon Legends Zaza.
Announced during Pokemon Presents on Tuesday, the game will take place in the Kalos region, the setting of Pokemon X and Y. The game will be released in 2025, but you don't have to take our word for it. Here's Jordan on his about to board his flight from Los Angeles after he viewed a secret video game, which you can't talk about just yet. Here he is on the whole Pokemon situation.
Hello, chaps. It is Jordan here in a hotel in Los Angeles, having just seen an unreleased video game and seen young Sheldon, which was the highlight of the trip thus far. Not the TV show, the actual guy, young Sheldon, with some thoughts on the Pokemon Presents. Now, I got up at 6 a.m. LA time to watch this. I thought it was okay. The problem with Pokemon Presents is that they have to serve a lot of masters. They have to literally serve masters in the sense of Pokemon Masters EX, like the mobile games and all that stuff. It's fine. But the highlight for me was Pokemon Legends ZA, Pokemon Legends Zaza, as we're calling it. It's a Legends game set in the future in the Kalos region from Pokemon X and Y. And I love Pokemon Legends Arceus, so I think it's probably going to be pretty good. But since then, Nintendo of America tweeted saying it's going to be set entirely in one city, Lumiose City, which, I mean, that can be fine. There's plenty of games that are set largely in one city, like your big open world kind of games. So if that's what Pokemon's going to do, and they're going to make like a cyberpunk-sized world with all these different like little regions in the city, like they kind of teased an underground kind of canal area where you'd get your water types and all that kind of thing, that would be pretty enjoyable. But it's a 2025 game, so Christ knows what the Switch is going to have in 2024. But that was pretty much it. The trading card game looks quite cool as well, but I don't know. More importantly, I think you should spend your weekend, one, playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, really good game, but also look up the Glasgow Wonka experience if you want some hearty, hearty laughs. That's pretty much all I've got to say. Also, I had some Skittles-flavoured energy drink, and I've not shat myself yet. Go with God. Love you all. See you next week.
So there we go. Thank you, Jordan. Andy, I mean, I am not... The only sort of perspective I have on Pokemon is that every time I go to Japan, my friends' children always want special Japanese Pokemon cards, and you can get them in 7-Eleven, fine. But you really got to hunt around for the good ones, and I don't really know what I'm looking at, and it's quite difficult, and it's quite a waste of time for me.
Yeah, I'd love Pokemon, but I've not played an actual Pokemon game properly since I was a kid, really. I mean, now that I have my own kids, we sat and played Scarlet and Violet together. But myself, probably the last ones I played were like Silver and Gold, because I'm the right age, right? Pokemon came out when I was like 11, 12, something that sort of age. So, you know, I was in school during the Pokemon card craze. I actually got pulled in by the headmaster once because I got caught with another lad at the back of the school field in a bush doing something suspicious, like, you know, pulling something out of our jacket and doing something suspicious,
which
clearly he suspected was drugs. And he's like, let's see what you were doing then. Open your, you know, empty your pockets. And I emptied a Game Boy Color and a link cable.
You were linking up.
Yeah, the look on his face when I was like, we were trading Pokemon, sir. He's like,
why do I work at such a lame ass school?
Yeah, get out.
This is not testing my teaching skills.
Do some
at
drugs
all.
Like a proper child.
Well, Jordan will be back next week to helm the show. We've got some good guests coming up, actually, on the list. But after we come back, we'll dive into the sad news of more widespread layoffs rocking the industry.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we're back with VGC, the video game podcast. Pete Donaldson and Andy Robinson with you. PlayStation is cutting around 900 staff worldwide, around about 8% of its entire workforce. And London Studio is toast by the looks of things, Andy. It's hard to kind of overstate how important that studio was to PlayStation. PlayStation 2, certainly, in its sort of formative years. So many big titles coming out of that studio back in the day, and you know, I've fond memories of, you know, the more ambitious titles like The Getaway and stuff. But there was some
absolutely
great.
I mean, they were responsible for iToy, you know, SingStar,
that one is.
You know, kind of more recently, they worked on like iPet and Wonderbook and a lot of VR games. And it's more to do with, like, I mean, they're connected to Sony's like UK HQ, the European HQ as well. So it does like bring with it like a lot of you know, kind of memories of how Britain was part of the fabric of the history of PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
PlayStation was cool, and a lot of that came from Britain, you know. You know, you think of games like The Getaway, and you think of games like GTA and Wipeout and Lemmings and, you know, things like that. And the club scene where they literally put PlayStations in nightclubs in the late 90s. You know, they made gaming cool, basically, for a slightly older audience. And it's super, super sad to see it ripped to shreds, really. I mean, you look at the studio, the UK studios, they've closed. It's not just this one. There's been a couple. I think they closed Liverpool Studio, didn't they? I mean, obviously, Psygnosis is long gone. It's, you know, the guys who worked on, you know, Drive Club recently and like, you know, games like that. It's, and also they centralized in the US about 10 years ago. So really, you know, it's not the same as what it was. A lot of this flavor that I used to love, and a lot of people used to love PlayStation for, this you know, kind of international flavor came from the fact that they weren't centralized, you know? Japan and America and Europe had autonomy to an extent to do what they want. So, you know, in Europe, people are like, oh, here's iToy and SingStar, you know, and Buzz and Drive Club. And then America would be like, here's SOCOM and, you know, Warhawk.
The more militaristic.
And stuff like that. Yeah. And then Japan studio would obviously be like, here's Ico and, you know, Last Guardian and Rain and, you know, things like that. And it was brilliant. Whereas now it just feels incredibly American. It feels more American than Xbox does, which is saying a lot, knowing where they came from, you know, how they compared and where they stood, you know, 10 years ago. I mean, I had a friend say to me recently, a friend in Japan, that Xbox feels like it has more of a presence in Japan now.
Right. Okay.
You know, the sales.
That was a long.
I mean,
obviously
the sales don't compare. PlayStation's well on top, but I think what they mean by that is, well, Xbox has got like a couple of Japan studios working on stuff. Whereas Sony, other than the team of Sobi, the Astrobot guys, super sad. So yeah, it's difficult not to get frankly like pissed off to see this. But Sony have softened the blow by, you know, making it clear that you know, this was coming. I mean, in their latest results a couple of weeks ago or whenever it was, they were lining this up big time, you know, saying, oh, we're going to have to make, you know, cost reductions or whatever phrase they use. And frankly, it's quite – shocking's not the word, but for people in business, it was surprising to see how much profit they'd actually made. You know, I think I said the other week they made $10 billion revenue, and only 600 million of that was profit. So obviously it's not like a small amount of money, but when you consider that games now cost 200 to 300 mil to make, and that's their Christmas.
But presumably not the ones that the London studios were even working on.
But these are small games, but there's the wages, they've still got to pay for those guys. You know,
and this is not just a video. We talk about so many video game layoffs. I mean, a lot of this obviously is a result of overstaffing during COVID, but also struggles like Brexit probably.
Yeah, of course. There's a lot of factors, and also they've invested a lot in these live service games. That was a big bet, which has cost them a ton. Because obviously they take ages to make. They might not even be hits. A lot is, it's like a one. If one of out of 10 is a hit, then you've done all right. I mean, Helldivers has done all right. They've cancelled The Last of Us 1. They cancelled, allegedly, the Twisted Metal game. I think there was one or two others they've cancelled, I believe. So it's that bet has clearly contributed to this. But the biggest thing is, like, console prices are not going down. Like, so usually what happens is in previous generations is that the consoles get cheaper to manufacture, right? But then they're not. Those days are kind of done now. They're not getting...
Just because of supply chain?
Cost of these system on chips and stuff that they have in PS5, they're not getting cheaper. So usually that'd help, because the big gamble, right, is that you take the hit on the hardware, and as it goes on, it becomes very profitable as the hardware becomes cheaper and the games sell. But not only that, but games cost such a stupid amount of money to make now. It's not sustainable, isn't it? You look at that profit. I mean, again, I know they're huge numbers, but so they've got to make, like, $1 billion to make 60 million profit. That's like, something's got to give there, right? I mean, this was always coming. It's just disappointing, it has to come at the cost of people rather than, them actually changing their strategy away from these big, massive bloody games, which you do, we've talked about this at length. It can't go on forever, right? They can't keep making these, 50, 100-hour, $300 million games. They need to start making smaller or shorter games. Or both.
But would it be fair to say that if you're in a boardroom and you're not really a gamer, but you happen to be on the board at PlayStation or whatever, you're in this kind of rarefied atmosphere at the top of a very tall building at wherever you might be in the world, and you've heard of your Call of Duties, you've heard of FIFA, you've heard of all of these games. They're the ones that get made, because they're the ones that non-gaming. people who work in high up in management at these companies, that's the ones that they've heard of. They're the ones that make headlines, and these kind of like double A, single A titles just.
Oh, of course, people have been chasing this dragon for like 10 years now, right? If you can have a FIFA Ultimate Team or a GTA Online, you're laughing, because that's going to pay your bills forever, to a certain extent. That pays for everyone else. But there's also, for every GTA Online, there's probably like 20 flops. We can't think of half of them, but huge companies have tried and fouled. I mean, what was the Amazon game? I can't even remember the name of it. It came out for about 2 weeks.
But also I think if you're a punter and these games sort of come out, I think sometimes, because that for every one mega epoch defining success, there's going to be 20 failures. Why invest your time in a game that might not be supported?
That's a good point as well, because the other aspect is that the market's oversaturated now, because one of the repercussions of, everyone jumping into gaming during the pandemic is there. I mean, look how many games there were last year. It's ridiculous. Like, I haven't got through my backlog, and I'm sure most people haven't. They're competing for your time. It's not as simple as just money. There's not enough time in the day to play all these games. We've never had more access to games. Game Pass, again, you've just got a pile of games there to play. They're bashing out games in sales now for pounds, for dollars. We can see that in the market data. Analysts will show you this, that consumers are gravitating to fewer, bigger games.
Well, I mean, the cost of living's gone up. We are time poor and money poor. And there'll be less appetite.
Do you remember when we were kids and we had to like buy Mega Drive carts or what have you? And once you finish that game, like, you just have to play it again, until you could afford another one for your birthday or whatever. Imagine like if you had Fortnite when you were a kid. Look at how much stuff is in that game. It's free. Yeah. They just launched a load of new games within Fortnite. Here's Lego Fortnite, which is a whole game. Here's a racing game within Fortnite. Here's a Rock Band game within Fortnite. Like, you're competing with that now. When you're selling games for 60, 70 quid, you're competing with kids who have hundreds and hundreds of hours of entertainment for free right on their laps.
Games aren't even games anymore. They're platforms in themselves. Yeah, of course. So it's like that's, I guess, the modern way to think of it. Well, speaking of gargantuan experiences, Last of Us director Neil Druckmann says he doesn't think he has any more or many more big games left in him. Uncharted 4 and Last of Us creative director Neil Druckmann says that he's seriously thinking about sort of giving up making blockbuster games. He said that he could envision himself transitioning to something a little bit more low-key, which enables him to continue being creative in a less stressful environment while also spending some more time with his kids. Proper sort of deathbed, this is what I want to achieve in my life kind of thing. If Druckmann gave up the entire discipline tomorrow, what would his legacy be, Andy? I mean, two big hitting, one quite formulaically kind of derivative, but the other one has kind of redefined what a zombie experience is.
Oh, wow, what a question. well, I mean, he certainly brought the medium forward in terms of, you know, kind of cinematic, narrative-driven games, right? I mean, they're two of the most impactful games of the last 10 years, easily, you know, whether you liked them or not. I guess his other impacts would be, you know, angry, toxic men on social media. but, you know, to his point, I think a lot of creators are now thinking this. You've seen another PlayStation creator, Corey Barlog, who works on God of War. They asked him why that wasn't a trilogy of games. And he basically said, 'cause I don't want to spend the rest of my life working on it. You know, even he didn't direct the second one. He gave it to the game designer, I think the lead game designer. He's working on it and something else. And that's what they need to think about now, especially if you're Neil Druckmann, right? Because these games can take like 10 years to make now, between 5 and 10 years. And you know,
three years in, these things can be spiked as well.
Yeah, as we've seen,
That's 3 years up to Swanee.
So if you're him, especially with now, he's broken into TV because HBO are working on, you know, very successful series of his creation. And he's directing episodes. He's directing episodes of the second series as well. If you're him and you're experiencing that, and clearly he looks like he's someone who wants to tell a story within a medium, right? I don't blame him if he'd be going, well, it takes me a year and a half or 2 years to pump out a series of shows or 10 years to work on this game, you know, which is obviously hugely risky. And then they're going to sack my employees for no reason whatsoever. Because again, we didn't mention that earlier. Sony have like, you know, sacked, laid off people at Insomniac and Naughty Dog, which is ridiculous.
The golden geese.
Insomniac are like literally PlayStation's first party business at this point. How much would Insomniac cost now? I think they bought them for something like 200 mil, something like that. It was a silly amount of money. Like, how much would they cost now? Knowing their output, they put out these 10, 15 million seller games regularly. You know, they are machines. And I think it's a disgrace that anyone's getting laid off at that studio.
If you are a creative person who has one eye on Hollywood, I mean, presumably the cycle of getting even the lethargic kind of nature of getting television and film out, it's still quicker than creating a video game. I sort of think of like these actors who kind of get into the cycle of like they do a film and then a year and a half later they get back on the PR kind of bandwagon and sell their film effectively. Good God, can you imagine like being a voice actor whose line get laid down maybe a couple of years into a 7 year or 6 year process? I mean, it's astonishing, really. I realize that voice acting comes in quite late in the process relatively, but there will be some punch up work that needs to be done quite early on. It's a long time, and you may in one career only ever work on three successful games that get
exactly. And I imagine that's what he's thinking now, because you look at how old you are and you go, well, on this this kind of cycle, I've only got two games left in me. So I can see now why they would want to work on smaller games. And I think that's what needs to happen. I think we need to move away from these juggernauts. I don't even think there would be much lost. I really don't. You know, these games have to play it so safe with these, you know, kind of big licenses because of how long they take to make and how much money they cost. I think we are potentially missing out a lot. A lot of my favorite games of the last couple of years are the smaller games, you know, the indie games, you know, the stuff that can afford to pack innovation into a, you know, 6 to 10 hour package.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see more of that. I mean, a lot of this stuff, I mean, this, we've had this debate before, how much, you know, kind of artificial lengthening of these games, you know, is going on with like packing, you know, these side quests and stuff into. I mean, Final Fantasy, which is out today, that has got like a stupid amount of side content in there that is, I think, fair to say, not spectacular in terms of, you know, the experience it's giving you. I don't think that game needs to be 150 hours long. I mean, is anyone playing that game if it's a third of the length and going, oh, I'm disappointed? Probably, actually, yeah. Which is which is the issue.
But that's
that we have equated...
Is that not the vocal minority, though? Is it not,
I don't think satisfying. So, because clearly companies are gunning to this, and you keep hearing, oh, it's this long, is this how many hours long, this how many hours long?
Right.
I think the problem that they have is that the games industry has equated value to length, and that's not true. You don't go into a movie and go, what? It's only 2 hours long.
It's girth, Andy. Yeah, it's a real shame. And I think the satisfaction of... I mean, because back in the day, it used to be just relentless kind of like collecting, you know, your Far Cry map clearing kind of vibes. But now I think people demand a little bit more from their collecting and their side questing and stuff. But I don't think it improves the actual. You've not got the main kind of head of studio, main storyteller working on these quests. You're just getting like they're almost like outsourced to other companies.
Well,
aren't
they are. When you have to make big games like that, it is made by multiple companies, and you're absolutely right. It'll be completely different creators working on all that guff to stuff the world with. I mean, give me a nice tight Alan Wake 2. Experience any day of the week.
Agreed. Well, elsewhere in the news, Sega. What the hell? I'm falling to pieces, Andy. Sega implies that Super Mario Wonder was responsible for Sonic Superstars selling less than expected.
What?
I mean, it's an interesting gambit, isn't it? It's an interesting. they've implied. Apparently, they've just released an English translation of a Q&A session held earlier this month. That can sometimes, depending on who does the localization, and it is localization and translation, it is sometimes the tenor of someone's argument can be lost a little bit. But following its quarter three results presentation for its current fiscal year, Sega executives have apparently said that Sonic Superstars sold fewer copies than had been forecast, and they kind of reckon that it launched with other titles that could have
been
a little bit more interested in. Yeah, so it fell short of the initial forecast. They're blaming other titles. If only they could have known and adjusted the release date accordingly.
Who could have seen this coming, right? Who could have seen this coming?
I know.
They decided to release days before a new Super Mario Brothers game, the first new side-scrolling one in 10 years.
They try to do Blur versus Oasis.
what the hell? You know,
I like that. Sega sort of say this as if to sort of go, well, it's your own fault, because look, Sonic. I know the last few titles have been well received by most Sega and Sonic fans. I understand that, but we've had 20 years of absolute tosh by and large. So it's kind of like you've only got yourselves to blame. And it's not necessarily the people creating the games now that you would sort of go, well, I'll probably just buy the Mario one, because that Sonic one could be, in the words of Gattuso, the football manager, sometimes it'll be good, sometimes it'll be shit. You just never know what you're going to get with a Sonic title, really.
It was pretty good. I played it. It's pretty good. They brought back the original co-creator for this one. It's his first one he's worked on in more than 20 years, I think. Oshima-san. I don't know. Look, I'm not a businessman. You'd think this game is going to do most of its business on Nintendo Switch, where the young people are, and they decided to release it 2-3 days before Mario Wonder. I don't know what the hell that was all about. You know, presumably it's got legs. You know, people keep buying it. I mean, it is a good game. Yeah, quick legs, indeed.
Yeah, I mean, we did. I mean, Jordan very carefully and helpfully gave us the other titles that were released in that week, in October rather. SpongeBob SquarePants, The Cosmic Shake, and DreamWorks Trolls Remix Rescue, suggesting that Sonic's main rival affected the game's sales most. I mean, I would say that if you are in the aforementioned boardroom of someone creating DreamWorks Trolls Remix Rescue. Are you saying the same thing? Or are you including
The good point is that why the hell did you release SpongeBob SquarePants during the same month as Mario Wonder?
Sonic's got to back himself if he wants to be a Premier League footballer. But, I mean, the Cosmic Shake, the SpongeBob SquarePants and Trolls Remix Rescue, they've got to be taking a long, hard look at themselves in the mirror. Or maybe there is like an undercurrent kind of like hardcore DIY following for these two titles. I would speculate there aren't more.
You got to imagine those ones. It's just like their sales is predominantly through like mums in Walmart, right? Like, mummy, I want, DreamWorks Trolls Remix. There you go then. Like, I don't think it really matters.
But then is SpongeBob really a deal? It's mainly an ironic purchase by a child who's like, well, a kid who's about 18, 19 nowadays.
I don't know what the price point is, but I imagine it's probably not 50 quid either.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Understood. Understood. Well, this has been VGC, the Video Game Podcast.
Indeed.
What's happening on the site? What's happening on the site?
Oh,
this week?
What is happening on the site? I don't know.
Look, it open your CMS.
That's a good idea. Jordan's in America swanning about. So
he is. Any indication about what he's up to? Because he's in Los Angeles.
If you're looking for Final Fantasy VII stuff with a big release today, as at the time of recording, then there's lots of that on the site. You know, we've got a big review roundtable podcast that's also available to listen to
on this feed.
Our review, and there's guides and all sorts of stuff around that. I mean, that's a big exciting game. It makes me wish I cared about Final Fantasy. I missed out on that.
I know it's other people. That's what I mean. It's other people seeing.
But I'm excited
like,
for their
Star
excitement,
and,
right?
And
because
core.
It's like this big classic
exactly.
game. That you know how you have nostalgia for stuff that you didn't play just because it was in the magazines at the time and around. You know?
Yes.
So
if
everyone has nostalgia for like Cloud and Midgar and
Barry Big Sod, I call it.
So I wish I had time in the day to go and play, but now I have to play two of them, which is not going to happen. Yeah. I wonder if it works on Steam Deck. It must do, right?
You'd think. So. I mean, they do generally. They either release a bit broken and they come round.
It's got to work on Steam
Deck. I don't
think
it'll test. It's got to. Yeah, it has to.
I'm going
to
Google it.
I mean,
does Final Fantasy. First of all, have a storyline. Yes. I guess that means
a rather lengthy one.
I guess that means a connecting storyline, right?
Right.
Does Final Fantasy work on Steam Deck?
It has to, surely.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess
it does.
The Steam Deck's getting a little bit long in the tooth these days, and I imagine these kind of new titles do test them. Alan Wake was a real, obviously, because it doesn't.
I think
you have to fiddle to get that on there, which I can't be asked to do. No, exactly. Which means I'm just playing less Alan Wake, has to be said.
Do you know what, listeners? I am going to download Final Fantasy VII on my Steam Deck. Full report next week. I'll be crying on the pod.
Let's hear about your bandwidth. How much are you rocking? That's
the thing is, I still want to finish Like a Dragon because, again, I'm in the same situation. I can't get to Infinite Wealth, which came out last month. Mm. Was it this month?
Without getting remember. That one done.
Yeah, I know. And I'm like, yeah. And you know what a pain in the ass for that is you can play that on Steam Deck, but I started on Xbox. And you can't transfer
it.
Oh, you
can't transfer it
so
over.
Now I'm,
surely
unless,
there's somebody
unless I want to kick myself
that.
Even further back, that's me done.
Oh, that's such a shame. I think the sort of length and breadth of those little side missions in Yakuza, and they are fun. I've said before on the podcast, just give me one game with all of the side missions from every Yakuza game. That'd be absolutely cracking and Like a Dragon. I'd absolutely love that. And none of the story, because the story is just ambling and it takes a very long time.
Do you know what I'd quite like? And again, this is like, don't take this the wrong way. Like, I wouldn't like any like harm to come to me. But if I was like hospitalized somehow.
Yes.
And
you were in agony.
And there's no, I could not work. And they're like, look, Mr. Robinson, you just need to rest. That'd be nice just to sit and play some games, you know.
Take it in.
I wouldn't have to do any like family things. And I get lots of sympathy, you know. Oh, you just play your video game. That'd be.
I've got a flight to Philadelphia, or rather New York, and drive down to Philadelphia for WrestleMania next month. And I am those sweet 7 hours where nobody can get hold of me.
That's the pretty like my top gaming time on a flight.
Yeah, massively, hugely.
The worst thing that ever happened to air travel was the introduction of Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi
connection with the outside world.
Yeah. Rubbish. Anyway, this has been the podcast. Send us any questions, comments and concerns to podcast@videogameschronicle.com. The ex and John Midler will be back next week after his incarceration for that Glasgow-based Willy Wonka experience. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Follow us on... we deleted the Twitter handle, for crying out loud. It's VGC_news, isn't it?
Yes, that's it. Well done.
It is. Right out of the top of the dome piece. Fantastic. We'd like, once again... exhaustively, I'd like to thank the great Grant Kirkhope for the VGC podcast theme song. Say goodbye, Andy.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.